Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I could now invite our panel to come up and join me here on the platform. And that is Howard Freeman and Will Tuckley, Jeremy Burden, Michelle Drage, and Sarah Whiting. Now, in your program, have we got enough chairs here? Yes, sit wherever you wish. Just check we've got enough chairs. We're okay. Yes. Sarah. There are no stairs at the end. It's just that sheer drop. Ooh. Draw ourselves in. Right. In your programme, we were going to split the panel discussion up into commissioning and providing, but in fact, because the panellists have a lot to say about commissioning and something about providing, we thought we'd mix it all up and have it as one go. Now, before we actually launch into any questions, each of the panellists is just going to set out their stall for 3 minutes. And so we hear them do that, and then we should take some questions. So, Dr. Howard Freeman, could I ask you to kick off?
Okay, Pippa, thank you. I'm going to give you some critical issues for CCGs over the next year. The first one is, remember you're a membership organisation, and remember everything comes from your members, your engagement with your membership practices. If you lose that, forget it, the game's over. Second one is something that Ruth said, the system has now flipped over. You are responsible for today and the grip on today. It's tight in London this year. It's difficult. Make sure you keep that grip. History says that when you're looking at big strategic issues, you lose the focus on today's operational issues, and they are your responsibility. Third critical issue is your relationship with the NHS Commissioning Board. You need to make sure that relationship starts immediately. The Commissioning Board in London wants to have that relationship. At present, it's up to the CCGs to start to set the ground rules for how that relationship is going to operate. It must not be the same as the relationships that PCTs had with SHAs, and that's going to be a risk. Next thing is around your commissioning support units. They are mission critical to you. They're new organisations. We're going to hear from them very shortly. You need to work with them to design organisations which work for you and work. It's about win-win. CCGs can't win without CSUs, which are strong and successful. And the final thing picks up Ruth's big theme, which is London is a coherent entity. I was looking the other week at NHS Commissioning Board South, which stretches from Kent to Cornwall. I drove down to Devon from Surrey the other week and I hadn't crossed their patch. It's not coherent. London means something. We all know what London is. London has strategic issues which are London issues, and we need to make sure that in the localism that CCGs rightfully espouse, we do not lose the London strategic issues. So they're my mission critical bits.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Howard. So if I could move on to you. And Sarah, Howard's already fingered you in terms of being from the CSUs. So.
Absolutely. So I want to pick up on a couple of themes that are going to recur throughout the day, because certainly they've been touched on by all speakers so far. And firstly, the most critical issue facing us is in-year delivery, without a doubt. As people have alluded to, we have a very challenging contracting round coming up. There are issues around performance and keeping a grip on the system as we move through transition. That is a challenging thing to do whilst we are creating new organisations and shutting down old organisations, managing the transition of people from one place to another, managing the transition of functions. And in some places, it's still not quite resolved where things are going to sit. So I suppose the critical issue for me is about urging a good deal of pragmatism as we actually move through this transition. New relationships are forming. We need to establish proper, good and strong relationships between commissioning support units, the CCGs, the NCB, and how the new system is going to work. But if we lose a grip on this year, our relationships are not going to start in a good place. So absolutely maintaining that focus and being pragmatic and working to develop those relationships to keep a hold on in-year is critical for us. Through that, then, we need to start thinking about how the system's going to work in the future, and there is a session later today to talk about some of the system risks. But within that, the role of CSUs is really only just starting to emerge. And again, the pattern is very different across the country. But an awful lot of what CSUs are currently being asked to do by CCGs and indeed the NCB is support primarily around the transactional side of the business. And that's absolutely fine. That's something that we are gearing up to do to make sure that we provide that support to the customers going forward. However, there's a real opportunity to actually think about how CSUs, covering quite large geographies, can really support and drive some of the transformation and innovation that we know is needed in the health system. Ruth alluded to the challenge of service transformation across London. And the CSUs are working with CCG colleagues to start thinking about the role that we can potentially play. And I want to pick up on one of those areas, and that's the area that bedevils us all continually, right throughout every part of the NHS, and that's information. Making sure that we have the right information at the right time to support our commissioning decisions is absolutely key, and something that CSUs are working on driving significant improvements in. That information's great. We can provide that to our CCGs to support their decision-making, as I say. But actually, how can we really start to powerfully use that information to drive some of the service transformation? We've touched on integrated care, and I think here is one of those significant opportunities. If CSUs are driving forward improvements in integrating information across care settings, how can we actually use that to support the CCGs, not just in their commissioning role, but in delivering integrated care? Integrated care pathways, then innovatively using new opportunities within the NHS contract to think about how you put in place a very different contracting model to support that. So that real shift for us in terms of commissioning support and what we can provide to CCGs is something that we need to really concentrate the conversation on over the next 6 to 18 months so that we can really fulfil a role to support CCGs and indeed the NCB to deliver that transformation that's required across London.
Thanks very much. Michelle?
Yeah, thanks. I've got one thing, really. It kind of reflects on what Bob was saying. I miss Ruth because I was doing transformation next door. But I want CCGs and the system to be able to enable innovation of providers when those providers are the GPs that are the members of the organisation. So I want you to be able to enable patients that come through my surgery door to come out feeling better and feeling satisfied. And at the same time, I want the doctors and the nurses and the other team members that are looking after them and working with patients to also feel satisfied and feel better. In other words, what I want to do is to innovate us towards a whole patient system that enables practices to manage what they should be managing. And I want hospitals and providers to be managing what they should be managing. And if integrated care is a route to doing that, so be it. But actually, there's far more than integrated care. There's what happens in the GP consultation. The fact that as a GP you're taking into account the social, the psychological, as well as the clinical and the multiple comorbidities, and as well as all the other layers of complexity, and you have 5 to 10 minutes to manage it at a time. I want that wiped off the map, to be honest. I want that to be sorted, and I think that's what your members want. So it's turning the commissioning system upside down. It's making commissioning work for the patient, for me as a patient, for you as a patient, when you first start to worry that you've got something that needs to be made better. Or even if you first start to worry.
Thanks very much indeed. And now we have Jeremy Burden, who's going to tell us again about the CSUs
but from South London.
Well, I don't disagree with anything anyone else has said, particularly with Sarah Howard. But I just wanted to emphasise one thing about what CSUs must never forget, that we are still part of the NHS and we are here to support local clinical commissioners, improve quality of services and outcomes for patients. We must not forget that that's what we're there to do. I completely agree about the grip in terms of 12-13 and preparing for 13-14, but what we must do is continue to find that balance between providing services to CCGs locally so they can continue to improve what they offer to patients, as well as not losing sight of some of the transformational issues. And I think that's a tricky balance that we need to find. And what we've learned, certainly in South London, is co-design and working with your CCGs is the best way to do that. But it's a key thing to not lose sight of that over the coming months.
Thank you. And Will, welcome from local government.
You put me on the end and I'm sitting next to a 3-foot drop.
Yeah.
So if suddenly I disappear, it isn't a question that anybody's
asking. I've got a lever here I could just pull. You are very welcome, Will, and please tell us from the local government perspective.
Thank you very much. I've got just four points, really. Howard mentioned the nature of relationships, and I think those are absolutely key. In local government, we've just done a survey of the London boroughs to find out about their relationships in health, and the good news is that everybody's reporting that relationships with CCGs are very positive, and that health and wellbeing boards, I think with one exception, I don't know who that was, are going well. And I think that's a particular tribute to GPs and CCGs, who amongst all the changes that are being made have been entering into the world of dealing with politicians, which I think is absolutely essential for many of the reasons that Ruth gave, but it's sometimes quite challenging. I think our relationship with the Commissioning Board and with Public Health England is very much in its infancy, and I'm slightly cautious to say this with two representatives of commissioning service organisations on the panel, but the relationship with them is currently non-existent. Now, that's probably about priorities at this time, but that's the position. London-wide level, I think there is a gap. Howard is on the London Health Improvement Board, so I need to be careful. I lead the alcohol theme work for the London Health Improvement Board, which seeks to bring together the NHS, the London boroughs and the mayor. I think getting that right is going to be vital over the next period, and we've got to work really hard to come up with the right solution in relation to that relationship. Secondly, in relation to integration, I echo completely what Ruth said about integration, that everybody talks about it, but everybody's talking about something slightly different. I think we have got some good examples. I think in local government we might need to be much more ready to engage with the NHS. We've done some really good work, I think, around redesigning the elderly care pathway in Bexley. I think there's some really good work elsewhere, but at the moment it's relatively isolated, and we need to join that together. We've got a burning platform, which is about social care. There's something called the Barnett Graph of Doom, which shows that by 2032 or whatever it is, local government as a whole will spend no money on anything other than social care. So we desperately need to integrate and find better ways of doing things. Thirdly, on public health, I think there is a bit of a clash of cultures between local government and the NHS. I think the transition is going well, but to some degrees we need to allow some innovation at local levels, and there's been some signs of a fairly directive approach to getting us to take on the right approach in relation to public health for the benefit of localities. Coming from the authority with the fourth lowest allocation across the entire country, or provisional allocation for public health, the money is clearly a preoccupation, and so there may need to be some settling down of the service before we can expand and realise the potential of the changes. Lastly, in relation to reconfiguration, I'm from South East London, and I've been experiencing the TSA regime. But actually, by commissioners working together in Bexley, which hasn't been easy, but actually the TSA regime has concentrated minds extraordinarily, we commissioned, I think, a plan for Queen Mary's that everybody locally, from the CCG to the local authorities, to MPs even, backs and providers. And we had the headline in the local newspaper that said, Queen Mary's saved at last. So there is some good news that can come out of these arrangements, of course, subject to consultation.
Thanks very much. Right, there you have those five stalls set out. Now, throw it open for questions. There are roving mics here, so if you'd like to raise your hand, wait till the mic comes with you, stand up, give your name and where you work, and pose your question or comment. Thank you. Right. Great minds. Both of them thought of it at the same time. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm there first. My name's Alan Kennedy. I'm the chief exec of Patient Care 24, which is a social enterprise out of our service. But I'm wearing a second hat. I'm also chairman of Crawley CCG. And my question is, I think, of Sarah, because I posed this question of my governing body last week to my members. And it's a question relating to assurance. How do we know when the CSUs are up and running that our investment will lead to service transformation? First question. How do we know that the quality of our partnership with our CSU is likely to succeed, and how do we measure that? So it's the how do we know questions.
Thank you very much indeed. And let's take the next question here. We'll cluster them together. Thank you.
My name is Peter Stott. I'm a GP in Tadworth, and I was a commissioning lead for 4 or 5 years. I'm a medical director of some provider groups across Surrey, which are called Interlink Care Solutions. I'm also the clinical governance lead for South East Coast.
Now, how do you have time to be service. Here? This is the question.
Because, well, that's another question.
You're very welcome.
I've been very warmed by what I've heard so far about the nature of a changed relationship between providers and commissioners. And you'll appreciate that coming from the background that I just described, that's something that I feel quite strongly about. Could I ask the panel exactly how they see the nature of that relationship changing? Because I think that is key to creating efficiencies in the health service and driving a lot of the things forward that we've talked about.
Thank you very much. Is there a third question to take? Thank you over there in the corner at the back. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Justin Varney. I'm a consultant in public health medicine in Barking and Dagenham. I just wondered, the panel haven't really mentioned the role of public health in the new world, and particularly the role of local authority public health giving healthcare public health advice to the CCG and being a very pivotal part of this decision making. And I think I'm concerned that during this transition there are a series of particularly vulnerable populations where we're trying to hold the boat together for the big issues, we're forgetting the marginalised, and issues like homelessness, domestic violence, and particularly the children's agenda are really vulnerable, and I'd welcome the panel's thoughts on that as well.
Thank you very much. Right, let's tackle those three. Sarah, you were named as wanting, so let's start with you and then we can pick it up.
Yes, and the question was about how will a CCG know whether their investment in commissioning support is actually going to deliver the transformation required, I think is what I heard from you. And I think, for me, it's about being very clear about your expectations, being very clear about actually what it is that you want to deliver in terms of those health outcomes for your local population, and working in partnership with your CSU to make sure that you've got the arrangement right between what you're going to do in-house and what you want the CSU to deliver on your behalf, and being very clear about how you're going to work together to do that. Now, that's all fine. You can write those things down. You can put them into service level agreements. You can set some KPIs around what it is you want to see delivered. But the key for me is about the relationship. And it's the strength of the relationship between commissioning support and CCGs that is going to deliver the transformation. It's not just simply a transactional, this is what we want you to do, here's an SLA, go off and do it. Because the system is complex. It's about partnerships. We will need to work together with you and your stakeholders to make sure that the support we give you does deliver the outcomes that you want for your population.
Thank you.
How do you measure that? Well, there's lots of traditional ways that they do that in the private sector. So customer satisfaction surveys. How satisfied are you about your relationship with your CSU? And any CSU needs to be thinking very seriously about how that satisfaction with that relationship is measured. And I think it is about the co-production, which has been touched on, and making sure that very early on we do make sure that we're very clear about your expectations and we co-produce those things and so therefore are more clear about the outcomes. And then we can set the traditional measures. But it is, for me, about the quality of the relationship and how satisfied CCGs are with that relationship and that it is delivering what they require.
Thank you. Jeremy, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Sarah's covered it all. I think the pivotal bit will be the relationship and how you keep in touch with how customers are responding to the work that the CSU is doing, and doing that in a systematic way that makes sense for both the CCGs and the CSUs in order to, you know, get some granular grip on how delivery is going. So I think that's a really good point.
Great, thank you. Okay, so Howard, can I ask you to pick up the other questions? Possibly the changing relationships bit.
So I think, Peter, in London certainly we're already beginning to see relationships at one level with providers, clinical, clinician-to-clinician relationships, changing. Many London CCGs have already started to engage at a clinical level to talk about how we change pathways of care across London. I think what becomes more difficult, and I'm not certain it has changed, are some of the things that Ruth was talking about, and certainly you sitting out there in Tadworth on the edge of the Epsom St Helier catchment area know this only too well, when we start to think about, so having had those discussions, how do you deal with a provider which actually can't make those changes? And there I think we've already rehearsed some of the issues around South East London, around the unsustainable provider regime. We've got other examples around where providers want themselves to look at the way they alter how they deliver services and perhaps go to a different model. But what I think we're beginning to see very much, and I'm quite heartened there, and as a CCG chair myself, I've already initiated those discussions with one of my providers where historically my PCT paid them out at several million pounds a year, never spoke to them as an associate commissioner. We've already started to talk to them about, so this is what we want to see, this is how we want to deliver care jointly with you and our GP providers and our community provider to our population. And you know what? They actually want to engage in that conversation. And the clinicians certainly want to have that level of discussion and engagement and direction from CCGs that I don't think they've ever had before, at least not for a very long time. So I think that, in a way, is how we're going to do it. I don't think it's going to be easy. You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's going to change the world overnight and everyone's going to just make changes to the way they deliver services. I think it's going to be a lot of blood on the carpet in London. But I certainly think that starting with clinician-to-clinician discussions and getting agreement about how you want services delivered to a population jointly is a very good start, rather than managers talking to managers about, so this is what the money says, so this is what you can do.
Howard, how are you going to, you talk about blood on the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the relationship gets that bad, though? Because it'll start off very politely, won't it? And everyone will want it to work in the best interest. But what happens when it gets really difficult?
I think that's where you need to start to think about some of the partnerships as a CCG that you're in, because remember, CCGs are, as Ruth said, quite small organisations. Your first partnership, I think, is with your other CCG commissioners. Now, in London, that's actually okay-ish as you move towards the edges of London, but when you start to move towards London, actually the biggest commissioner for most of the big London trusts is the commissioning board. So my local acute, St George's, about 50% of its services will be commissioned by the commissioning board. So the two CCGs have to work in partnership with the commissioning board. So I think that's So the first thing is to use those partnership relationships and use those levers. We've already talked about the role of the CSU in transforming services, and they are very much part of that partnership relationship. After that, you start to go wider, don't you? You actually start to engage the National Trust Development Authority, and ultimately you start to go down the other routes. But I do not think, given the experience we've had in London, and the reference today have been Barnet and Chase Farm and to the South East London issues, that for London, changing the way we deliver services and changing the way acute trusts are configured to deliver those services in London is going to be easy.
Thank you. Right, public health. Michelle, I know you wanted to comment on this, and then, Will, of course, I'm going to turn to you to comment on that as well.
Yeah, I think Justin illustrates precisely my point, really, which is without public health intelligence and information and expertise, the CCG is forever going to be looking at acute figure data and not taking into account the multiple complexities that determine whether a patient who needs to not be in hospital isn't in hospital, if you take my point. It's that expertise. So absolutely, and I think one of the things we've been doing, certainly through my organisation and jointly with the London Commissioning Council, is to start really early, talking about 2 years ago, about getting CCG GPs and GPs in general to understand the point that Will was making around that's now coming to fruition, the relationship that is needed between local authorities and general practice. And I see public health through local authorities' eyes, just as I see general practice through a local authority's eyes. In fact, I would repeatedly say your service users are our patients. We're fishing in the same pool. Actually, it's only a subset of that pool that ends up in hospital, even though those numbers are increasing. So I think that 85% of patients that never get to hospital, perhaps the 5% that do that shouldn't, that's where the public health and local authority and GP provider access and primary care needs to be supported.
So I very much echo that, and the questioner's point about the importance of that public health advice. I think it would be entirely counterproductive if public health moved leadership into local government and neglected the fact that actually we need both systems working together, and indeed wider systems working together, to maximise the impact on those public health challenges that we face. In our case, there are some complications with that, and I think there will be in individual localities. The complications being that because of the problems in the South East London health economy, in Bexley in particular, less and less money has been invested directly in public health outcomes, and we haven't had a director of public health for a substantial period of time. So it won't be that on the 1st of April everything will be transformed because the local council will be in the lead. Where I think what we have established is a much greater consensus about the importance of public health and the importance of drawing in a wide range of services through education, environmental services, other ways of influencing the health of the population. And it's through that mechanism and through common advice that we're going to start to impact on challenges that, such as the ones that we face in relation to childhood obesity. On the positive side, the questioner mentioned children's services. In Bexley, we're focusing very strongly on safeguarding, and public health will have a significant impact into strengthening our arrangements right across the system for protecting children.
And what do you see the relevance of the public health leadership in terms of the health and wellbeing boards? I mean, in terms of really sort of getting to those populations that Justin was worried were going to be neglected?
I think it's a very good opportunity for public health to use the health and wellbeing board as a vehicle for raising the profile of the issues that directors of public health and their staff can point to, and to point to those cross-organisational solutions to address those areas. I think there is sometimes a danger that public health is a sort of voice from the outside. What health and wellbeing boards provide is access to decision makers, actually who can champion those changes. And if they capture the imagination and they're presented with passion, actually then the chances of transforming are so much greater.
Thank you. Right, let's take another round of questions. One here, one over there. Wait a minute, just get a microphone there. Yes, please carry on, thank you.
Richard Gibbs, Vice Chair, Southwark CCG. This is a question I think for you, Howard, but the other panellists may want to respond. Howard, you mentioned as your first point the point about CCGs being membership organisations, and I wonder if I could ask you to say a little bit more about how we harness the power of that. A GP that you and I know once explained to me that getting GPs to agree on a policy is like herding cats through a farm gate. So you could be very pessimistic and say that introducing the membership organisation concept could slow down the progress of transformational change if you think of all the steps that Ruth explained that you have to go through to get transformation. And in addition, you have to get all your members united behind it. A pessimist might say, well, that's going to make it more difficult. I'm not a pessimist. I can see it potentially being very powerful, and we're doing some work on Southwark to try and harness the power of that. But any further advice from you on how we should do that would be gratefully received.
Thanks very much.
I'm Alison Keating. I'm the London manager of the National Treatment Agency, and I kind of wanted to pick up on the public health point a little bit, because obviously one of the key reasons that local authorities were given the role of kind of addressing public health was in part to address the social determinants of health. And I guess I'm interested in seeing how do you envisage that public health, clinical commissioning groups and commissioning support units will actually work together to address that key issue, to the point where it actually impacts on the patient who walks in and talks to their GP.
Thank you very much. Other question over here. Thank you.
My name is Daniel Casson. I'm Head of Business Development at Jewish Care, a pan-London social care provider, also a member of Barnet Link and on the Barnet Enfield Haringey Clinical Strategy Group, and prospectively a member of Health Watch, if that comes to be. There's two parts to my question. First of all, I've just been involved in quite difficult negotiations on continuing care across London, in which there was consultation with providers, which actually fell down in the end, and there was an imposition of results, an imposition of a decision, which wasn't agreed. And it maybe falls in the category of the fact that there is so much indecision about who's making the decisions at the moment, maybe that, but there was an imposition in the end, and relationships have fallen down, and we're at a bit of an impasse at the moment. The second part of my question or point is, I'm quite surprised to hear, I'm pleased to hear people talking about, we've talked about the person being at the centre of delivery, the person being at the centre. What we haven't talked about, and it hasn't been mentioned, and some of the answers have actually almost introduced it, is the role of Health Watch in this, because people have been talking about how people's views are being taken on board, and no one's actually yet mentioned Health Watch, which I think is quite an omission this point. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Right, let's tackle those three. So we've got something about herding GPs, which maybe Michelle and Howard would like to pick up. Something about public health, social determinants of health, and how CCGs and CSUs are going to be addressing those, and then also I think your question about Health Watch and the role of Health Watch there is one that hasn't been picked up at all this morning, I think, so thank you for that, and the relationship breakdown. So, Howard, can I start with you again?
Yeah. So I've actually never really tried to herd cats, Richard, I have to say, but I'm sure it's possible, and herding GPs is certainly possible. I think this is actually about how you work with GPs and how you put things to GPs and how you get GPs to agree things. Most things are self-evident to GPs. They're very pragmatic people. And I don't believe that most of these difficult decisions will challenge GPs at the level of making a decision. Where it gets very difficult, of course, is when it starts to affect you in your service delivery, in your provider role. And I think you can get around that. I think you can get GPs to see bigger pictures, and GPs are not trained to see bigger pictures. The training of a GP is actually around the person in front of you, the population you serve in your practice, and perhaps a bit more. So we have to do some work around that. I think the flip side of the coin is the power of getting GPs engaged. And remember, I don't think it's a coincidence that one of the Lansley tests is around engagement of GPs. Because I think once you have GPs engaged, you have some very, very powerful levers that you can start to pull and some very powerful messages you give or you can give. So I'm actually not pessimistic about it. It is a different form of challenge. It's different to the way perhaps you get the wider public engaged. It's very different to the way that perhaps PCTs were made to be engaged. But part of being a leader of a CCG is to pull that off. And I'm confident that we have leaders who can pull that off with GPs in London who actually are very good thinkers.
Thank you very much. Have you got anything to add to that, Michelle, from your London-wide perspective?
The usual answer to the herding cats thing is a saucer of cream, isn't it? That's usually the response, and I kind of find that, you know, give me the cream now. I've got three cats myself, okay? And the thing about cats is they herd themselves when they're ready to herd themselves, and I think that's really what Howard is saying. Just one other ingredient, I think, that you need to do, which is to still focus on what actually GPs do in their provider role. And again, I come back to relationships. If you get the relationships between the CCG and the GPs, whether they're members or not, actually, if you get the relationships right, you will get that engagement. If you really want to get the relationships right with GPs, then you really need to talk about the things that GPs spend their life doing, which is what goes on in those insufficient, inadequate consultations. Because that's when the relationship really comes into play. That relationship between patient and doctor played out hundreds of times a week in that core 10 minutes. Give me more 10 minutes and I'll be your friend for life as a GP.
Thank you. Jeremy, from the CSU point of view, in terms of herding GPs or encouraging a more sort of collegiate and partnership approach, how do you think, any ideas on how the CSUs might intervene on that?
I think it's very much about how the CCG and the CSU are working together to use the various capabilities and capacities that they've got in terms of the scarce resources. So how are the contracting teams getting alongside the GPs for managing and negotiating the contracts? Mm. How are they getting alongside the comms in terms of tricky issues? How are the medicines management teams not just doing medicines management but perhaps doing wider issues around developing primary care with some of the skills that they bring? So it's how you're using the capacities and the skills within the CCG structures and the CSU to help the GPs in their everyday work, I think, is just as important as some of the wider transformational issues.
Thank you very much. Right, public health and the social determinants of health and addressing those that Alison had asked.
Clearly the million-dollar question. I come from Bexley, as people know, and one of the going to say the great tourist attractions, it isn't quite. We have the Crossness pumping station, which was Sir Joseph Bazalgette's Victorian innovation that brought clean water and separated water and sewage and helped combat cholera in London many years ago. And it does remind us that there are clearly core social determinants of health. One of the reasons why we did some work over the last year at the London Health Improvement Board at a London-wide level on key public health themes, alcohol, cancer, childhood obesity, was to demonstrate how if you bring together CCGs and the NHS, you bring together public health, you bring together local government, you can begin to tackle at scale some of those key issues that influence strongly the health and well-being of the population. And I would argue that on each of those themes we're beginning to make quite serious progress in the way that other cities like New York have done over the past decade. So things like intervention and brief advice around treatment for people who drink excessively, things like greater enforcement and licensing over restricting the supply of alcohol, things like getting the mayor and leaders in London to argue for a much better balanced relationship with alcohol within London, are all trying to tackle those wider issues and the social determinants of health. At a local level, I think it is about the issues I mentioned earlier, which is trying to engage the wider system, which includes clearly things like the quality and accessibility to housing, includes issues such as education and schools and what role they can play in quality of life of our children. It includes some of the areas where we're trying to holistically look at the well-being of families through all the various programs which are currently around and the promotion of work. I think all those things have great potential to help us begin to address the social determinants of health, but we're not going to solve it overnight. I know Alison knows that.
Thank you. Sarah, you've got a brief comment to add to this, and Howard as well.
Yes, because I think you mentioned the role of CSUs in this, and I think firstly to say, well, I was a little bit saddened to hear that you don't have a relationship as yet with your CSU, but I'm sure that Jeremy will be following up quite closely after this session to make sure that you do.
It was London-wide, actually, Jeremy.
Okay, well, in North West London, actually, we engaged with the local authorities very early on when we were establishing the commissioning support unit, because I think one of the things that we haven't really realised the potential of as yet is properly integrating commissioning support in behind the commissioners to deliver their aspirations around their health and wellbeing strategies. And some of the conversations that we're starting to get into in North West London is actually how can the CSU act actually as an honest broker in things such as community budgets, etc., where local authorities and the CCGs are very actively trying to bring the resources around communities together to make sure that some of those wider determinants and issues such as housing, education, etc., can be funded to support better health outcomes. And CSUs can potentially play a really important role to facilitate that, to put in place the right contractual arrangements that will allow that to happen and act as that honest broker. And sometimes what are tense conversations when it comes to actually how we're utilising those resources and are we spending the money in the right place. So I think there's a lot of potential there, and I look forward to continuing that conversation with you and colleagues as we go forward.
And Howard.
Yeah, so very briefly, first of all, echo everything that Will says about London Health Improvement Board across London. But at the local level, and I know everything is everywhere, it's different in London. I spent yesterday at the Merton Voluntary Sector Conference sitting between the Borough Police Commander and the Borough Fire Commander as one of the local organisations. And we presented a piece of work that we have done with local faith groups and with the voluntary sector locally, looking at helping particular populations access healthcare and showing in 10 months the outcome about that. I see very much my CCG as being part of a local community and dealing with some of the local issues at a different level to the way it's been dealt with before. So I can talk to practices where I know they serve particular communities, and we can put in place bespoke support for those practices, and we have done that
so they can actually do some work. So I think one of the things about CCGs is they can get to the parts that others haven't got to before. And that's very much in partnership with local authorities, with public health, and with the voluntary sector, as well as the statutory sector locally. So, you know, I think it's, I hope it's going to be good news.
Thanks very much for that. Now, I'm aware we haven't addressed the health watch issue, and I'm just going to ask the panel briefly, is there anything that you can add in on that? But David, what I'm going to do is keep the health watch issue live through the next panel discussions, so, because I think it's something that we need to address and keep it surface there.
I just want to say Health Watch has been actually a very strong component of our health and wellbeing board, of Cheddar Board, since it was started. And I think that has really helped to raise the profile of Health Watch. In Bexley, they've also been quite active in engaging with residents and explaining some of the wider reconfiguration consequences, which has been extraordinarily helpful. So I think Health Watch are a vital component of it. I worry about this scale of resources, but that's a problem that we all face. But I think that Health and Wellbeing Board provides a means of getting the views of Health Watch again in at the decision-making level.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Will. Right, we're late for coffee, so can I ask you to thank our panel?
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.